You ever get the feeling that everything in America is completely f***ed up?
They're saying I should think stuff.
Something is wrong with me.
To be so cynical.
Practice.
Welcome to another edition of Positive Cynicism. Just a reminder before we get into the show to make sure to check out all the shows here on the Jittery Monkey Podcasting Network, Nerds United, Five Heart, My 1-2-3 Cents, Greg Mahochko, and Kevin Hunsberger do a good job with all their shows. I mean, not as good as I do here on Positive Cynicism, of course, but give them a listen. And be sure to rate and review the shows on iTunes, Stitcher, Podbean, wherever you listen to the shows. And don't forget, you can go over to jitterymonkey.com/shop and pick up your Jittery Monkey t-shirts. So they make a great, great gift. Or if you just want to wear one yourself, you will be the coolest person walking around on the face of the earth. I really should not try to sell things. I am not a promoter. We're going to take a commercial break. This month, or this week on Positive Cynicism, this edition, I am joined by Kevin Hunsberger of My 1-2-3 Cents. We're continuing the nostalgia theme that we've had all month here on Positive Cynicism. And we're going to discuss, since Kevin's podcast is all about professional wrestling, we're going to discuss how he became a fan of wrestling, why he continues to be a fan. And I think it's a good discussion. You can tell me after you listen to it if you agree. So let's hit that commercial break, and I'll be back with Kevin on the flip side.
Hey everyone, Kevin Hunsberger here from My 1-2-3 Cents, the podcast, and my123cents.com. Every Monday, a new episode drops with the latest news and happenings in the world of professional wrestling. Head to the archives and listen to interviews with legends of the ring like Double J, Jeff Jarrett, Mick Foley, Kamala, and Dan the Beast Severin. Current superstars like Sheamus, Xavier Woods, and Kofi Kingston have been part of the discussion too. Again, it's My 1-2-3 Cents, the podcast, a wrestling fan's perspective. Thanks for listening.
As you heard in that commercial break, that was a preview, a promo, a commercial for My 1-2-3 Cents, another show here on the Jittery Monkey Podcasting Network, and I am joined now by the host of My 1-2-3 Cents, Kevin Hunsberger. You probably know him. He's been on the show before. Plus, as I said, he has a show called My 1-2-3 Cents here on the Jittery Monkey Podcasting Network. Do you always say Jittery Monkey Podcasting Network when you say the whole thing, or do you just say Jittery Monkey Podcast? Or
I actually do say Jittery Monkey Podcasting Network, and I almost feel like, and I'm not trying to take credit for anything, but I almost feel like I kind of, because I think Greg always just called it Jittery Monkey, and then, or Jittery Monkey Podcasts, and then I threw in Podcasting Network, and I don't know why. It just sounds more official, I think, but, you know, it's you and I sitting in my bonus room right now recording this, so kind of peel back the curtain a little bit.
Yeah, I hope the audio is coming out okay. If it isn't, after I record and check it, this will go into the missing episodes archives.
Yes.
But we'll see, because we were just joking before we – well, really wasn't joking. I was more like insulting Kevin, which if you follow at Chad Smart on Twitter and at Kevin Hunsberger on Twitter, you see this is basically all we do.
I wish I could do a Mean Girl Shut Up GIF live and in person here, but yeah, that's my gimmick.
That was my other Christmas gift present idea for you, was a shirt with that gift on it.
Love it.
Jiffy. I don't know.
I always say GIF, but I know the kids call it GIF these days, so. But what do they know, right?
Right. They're kids. I don't know. But I was saying that Kevin has been doing the My 1-2-3 Cents podcast for 4 years now, and he needs to step up his production value. He needs to buy actual microphones and a soundboard.
You know, My 1-2-3 Cents needs to make some money, because I've been doing the podcast for 4 years, and but luckily now there's, of course, some revenue streams coming in. So yes, I will invest this will be the year. I was actually talking to Sam Hunter, who is the GM of Stride Pro Wrestling, about his audio equipment that he uses. So he gave me some recommendations on mics, and I know you've got some stuff too. So I will be investing in some equipment for 2019 for sure.
Well, I was just thinking, you know, if we can get, or I shouldn't say we, but if there are enough people out there to donate millions of dollars to build a wall, surely a GoFundMe can raise $200 for podcasting equipment.
That's a good idea. That's a good idea. We have to look into that, explore that option.
And if you were thinking about donating to build a wall, just donate it to us, because at least this way the equipment will actually be bought.
Yes. And no one will be able to go over our microphone or under our microphone.
And Kevin's never getting over anyway. So
that is true. That is true.
Anyway, I have Kevin on this week because if you've been listening during the month of December 2018 My 1-2-3 cents. It's
thanks for the other plug, yeah, brother.
To the Positive Cynicism podcast, we've been talking nostalgia all month long, and I was here visiting Kevin for the holidays, and I didn't really have a topic in mind, so I thought, what better than to bring Kevin on so that I can insult him multiple times.
And face-to-face.
Yes. But to talk nostalgia of wrestling, because the My 1-2-3 Cents podcast, we should say, focuses on the world of professional wrestling. Mm-hmm. You and I have been fans for more years than we probably want to admit at this point in time.
Yep.
Not because of our age, but more because you look at the current product and we say, why are we still fans of this?
Right.
But I want to just let's walk down that memory lane, sure, that nostalgia lane of professional wrestling.
Yeah.
Because I think we have similar backgrounds, but different paths.
Yeah. Well, we are both from the Midwest. I'm closer to the city of St. Louis than you are, but we found out through several conversations after we met that we were at some of the same house shows. And I think even pay-per-views, I think you were at the Bad Blood pay-per-view as well.
Yes.
In St. Louis. So my path began actually when I was very young. My dad, brother, and uncle watched wrestling all the time. And it was usually Wrestling at the Chase, and it was World Class Championship Wrestling that came on in St. Louis. KPLR, Channel 11 aired Wrestling at the Chase, and then Channel 30 aired World Class. Mm. I had no interest in wrestling at the time. But I do remember, and they would go, the NWA at the time would come to the Kiel Auditorium, and they would go on Friday nights and see the matches too. So happened one time I was watching, and this is, I've kind of traced it back to, ironically enough, we're talking right around Christmas here. It was Christmas night. It didn't air on Christmas, but it was Kerry Von Erich, Ric Flair, steel cage match, 1982, when Michael Hayes was the special guest referee. They were friends. The Freebirds were friends with the Von Erichs at the time. Something about that match caught my eye. I was a huge Kerry Von Erich mark, and now Ric Flair is my all-time favorite. So there was something there that night. And then a little later, that, like I said, 6 months later that summer, I'm flipping channels with some friends. It's Don Morocco and Jimmy Snuka. They're kind of going at it verbally. Morocco's in a suit and spits into the ring, and it hits Snuka. And Snuka dives over the top rope and beats the hell out of Morocco. So that's the second instance that I can pinpoint and say, these are the two things that really drew me in as a wrestling fan.
See, I was thinking about this, trying to figure out when my fandom kicked in.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe you can help me on timeline, because I could have probably looked this up through Wikipedia, but I didn't. Because I remember I watched Wrestling at the Chase, I think, towards the very end of its run.
It ended in September of 83, so yes.
Okay, yeah, because I remember, my cousin would watch it, and then he told me about Bulldog Bob Brown, mm-hmm, Jimmy Superfly Snuka, and I was like, these are stupid names. are you watching animals wrestle? What's going on? But then I remember getting more into the Jim Crockett promotion at first.
Yeah.
And I remember that was right after Magnum TA had his career-ending wreck.
Okay, well, that would have been 86.
Oh, that's 86? Okay.
Yeah.
Okay, then that – I'm way off, because I remember my family had the giant satellite dishes that, uh-huh, were popular, and we got that in 84, and at that time I was watching World Class, the Mid-South.
Okay.
And I remember watching WrestleMania 1 live because it was broadcast on the Madison Square Garden network.
Right. That would have been March of 85.
Okay. I thought Magnum's...
No, he had his accident in October of 86. Because I think one of his last big appearances was at the Great American Bash that summer. And I don't remember if that was the summer he wrestled Kamala and did the belly-to-belly or if that was the summer of the... Bloody I Quit match with Magnum TA inside the steel cage, but it was right before Starrcade, I remember.
Okay. Yeah, because I remember Crockett had done a special, I want to say it was live, on TBS on like a Friday night or Saturday night. And they, I think it was basically Magnum's like kind of retirement speech angle. Mm-hmm. But I don't remember... Other than the Rock and Roll Express being on there, I don't remember anything about the show. So I don't know if you
have I don't remember that at all. So that's interesting. I have to look that up.
I probably just made it up. As I do with a lot of things on this show. Yeah. So what is it? Because, you know, obviously now we know the curtain's been pulled back in professional wrestling. But when we were younger, as getting fans into it or getting into it as fans, there was that kind of realism aspect that you bought in, you bought into the disbelief, you know, you bought into the fact that Hulk Hogan was larger than life and could vanquish anybody. Ric Flair was the talented wrestler, but the chicken heel that cheated all the time. Yeah. You did the horseman, but what was it about wrestling that captivated you to be a fan?
In those early days, it was that those larger than life personalities, you know, Kerry Von Erich was like a Greek god. In those early days, for me, he was the equivalent of what everybody else kind of viewed as Hulk Hogan. And then I eventually started watching WWF. And then, of course, Vince McMahon had much larger-than-life characters. Hulk Hogan, Andre the Giant, Rowdy Roddy Piper. And, you know, you see those guys, and they just are doing things. You know, they're getting in there. And, yeah, when you're 10, 11 years old, it was real to us back then. And then when, you know, finally it kind of comes out, you know, this is, some people called it fake, others called it predetermined or scripted. And it's weird because you're right. It's even at 45 years old and 35 years after the fact, there are times when I don't want to necessarily bring it up because there is that stigma attached to being a wrestling fan. But, you know, I can't even today explain it. I love being a part of, you know, independent wrestling with Stride Pro Wrestling and some of the other companies that I've done some ring announcing for. It's the athleticism to an extent. It is the ability to kind of suspend reality for a while and just kind of lose yourself in the moment. It's no different than going to a movie or going to a concert. And you know, obviously movies, people don't say, well, you know, that's fake. It's entertainment. But with wrestling, it's hard because you have characters who are playing themselves to an extent, but they're characters. And so then it's like, you know, Stephanie McMahon, case in point. In real life, she's doing all these generous things, but on TV, she's this evil, vile woman who everybody hates. And it becomes sometimes a challenge. And it's hard to, because then you try to apply logic to an illogical situation and it turns into a big conundrum. And then fans get frustrated and mad. And why do I watch this still? Well, there's still that thing about it that I feel like we can all kind of bond over it. We talk about it, whether it's you or Travis. That's kind of what the antithesis of my 1-2-3 cents was the three of us all in our different locations texting or sending messages through. Actually, I think we were emailing back then where there was no social media. And then I thought, you know what, let's put this into a blog form and eventually a podcast. So there's just something about it that, to me, has stood the test of time.
And he mentioned Travis. That's Travis Yates, who appears as the co-host on the first week every month here on Positive Cynicism. Shout out to him. I'm going to make probably an analogy that I hope works. I remember... Again, growing up in the 80s, you had the what is now, you know, called the hair metal scene, which is not a pleasant term, but the glam metal of the 80s, where you had these larger than life rock personas of like a David Lee Roth, Quiet Riot, Poison, you know, all these big bands. And then when the 90s came in and the grunge movement kind of took away, I remember Nikki Sixx making a comment of, I believe it was Nikki, who said musicians now look like they just got off work at the gas station because it was the flannel shirts. It was like guys that didn't look the rock star thing. In wrestling, I think that's one of the things, and I know we're supposed to be talking nostalgia, but I'm bringing it to the current day, is you look back at the 70s and 80s, superstar Billy Graham, Hogan, Bruno Sammartino, these, again, larger-than-life personas. And now, I think because guys are also on social media now, so you can see, you get a better insight of the actual person play behind the character. But a lot of WWE and Impact, and even the smaller guys, the indie guys, they don't have that larger than life persona. They're more regular person.
Right. Yeah.
And so, you know, does that hurt, I guess, the marketability of professional wrestling?
You know, that's a very good question. And I think to an extent it does, because there not only were their personalities larger than life, they were all unique. Mm-hmm. You know, you had Hulk Hogan, you had the Junkyard Dog, you had Ric Flair, you had Dusty Rhodes. Now, you know, you lump some of these guys and they're all kind of the same. You know what I mean? There's nothing that just, you know, what's the difference between, for example, Kevin Owens and Sami Zayn and the members of the Revival? You know what I mean? Like, there's, I don't feel like, and maybe, you know, we've talked about, or you have talked about it all month long with these nostalgia episodes. Nostalgia is a powerful thing. And we all want to believe that, you know, when we were kids or when we were growing up, whatever TV or movies or music or, in this case, professional wrestling we watched was better than what the kids today are into. So, you know, it may not, you know, because today's kids probably will grow up watching Braun Strowman and some of these other superstars, men and women now, by the way, too, which we didn't have really as kids. And, you know, 30 years from now, they may be having this same discussion with the next generation, the Miz's kid and Daniel Bryan and Bree's daughter. And, you know, they'll be the next round of superstars that people are talking about.
Yeah, you mentioned women. And I was going to say, I think the one true larger-than-life persona right now, and it's actually helped by social media, is Becky Lynch.
Oh, yeah. I mean, absolutely.
She is playing I'm assuming is the character of Becky Lynch.
Mm-hmm.
You know, 100% going above and beyond. And if you see her tweets, her social media presence, it's actually adding more interest into what she does. Instead of just tweeting out nonsense, it plays into storyline, it plays into character development. And I think that's another aspect that is missing, where, you know, like Zack Ryder used the internet to get over, to get attention on himself, but now, you know, what's he tweeting about? His wrestling figure podcast.
Right.
So when you're watching him on television, it's, and this is not a knock against Zach, it's taking a wrestling persona, but then putting a more realistic or real life persona to him of just nerdy collecting guy.
Right. And, you know, it's interesting because I think the wrestling business, WWE especially, is very, you know, they change their ways, because it was in the 80s. It was those larger-than-life personas, those characters. Then in the 90s, we kind of transitioned into a down period where we had the really cheesy, you know, the clowns and the plumbers and the dump truck drivers and those guys. And then we got more realistic with Shawn Michaels and Bret Hart and Triple H. And then we turned into the Attitude Era with Stone Cold and The Rock. And I feel like now we're kind of at that point where we're mixing in the reality, but we're still not completely, you know, I think what you and I have talked about the Attitude Era and whether or not it was a successful time. I think part of the success of it, I would argue, is that they weren't as scripted and they were able to be themselves, but amped up.
Mm-hmm.
And now I feel like a lot of times you're trying to fit square pegs through round holes with some of these characters and trying to make them memorize lines and they're not, you know, ready for that. Just let them be more themselves and turn up. And Becky Lynch, as you said, case in point, is the perfect example of that right now. I would say she is the best thing going right now with WWE.
No, I totally agree with that. And I think if you're Vince McMahon and his writing team, hopefully they have WrestleMania 35 mapped out. And if the main event says anything besides Becky versus Ronda Rousey, everyone should be fired and brought in because that is your money match for WrestleMania this year.
Exactly. We've talked about this before as well. That slow burn that we don't get anymore because of social media, because of 3 hours of Raw every week, 2 hours of SmackDown. They don't let things simmer like they used to. Remember the Mega Powers build up. I mean, that was like well over a year of development, and they were dropping little hints all along the way. But of course, we just had Saturday Night's Main Event and then a handful of pay-per-views in between. It's harder to do that these days, but it's possible to be done because we saw it with the Daniel Bryan build up to WrestleMania 30. Ronda Rousey and Becky Lynch, in my opinion, could be that build up, that Daniel Bryan story for WrestleMania 35. And it would be an amazing main event. They just got to keep them away from each other up until that point, which I think is possible. We're only, what, 3.5-4 months away?
Well, yes, but by today's WWE standards, they will have fought in 18 matches, 22 tag teams. They will be tag team champions at one point. They will.
Yeah, that's a good point.
And that's where I was going to go next is back in the day, like you said, there wasn't as much live television. Mm-hmm. You only had 4 pay-per-views, so it was easier, and you only had an hour. You know, primetime wrestling was 2 hours,
right?
But that was mostly house show stuff that was shown, like Superstars and Main Event, I think it was, were your main story progression shows, your syndicated stuff. And due to the only having an hour, you wouldn't see the same people every week.
Right. Yeah,
and even now with 3 hours of Raw, 2 hours of SmackDown, I think if WWE is seriously interested in changing things up, which they have recently said they are because ratings are down, I still think that there is a way that you can utilize those hours without putting on the same show week after week. Just reading some reports, you know, I forgot about No Way Jose and Mojo Rawley, and all these guys that come in, you see them for a few weeks, and then they disappear for months until something comes in. Or, you know, it's like your title contenders face off for a month or two, and then they disappear, and a new challenger just gets inserted for no reason.
Right.
I think that if you found a way to rotate your characters out, your wrestlers out, it would be better because, like you said, the slow build built interest. We just recently saw TLC pay-per-view, and you know, Seth Rollins and Dean Ambrose were on that show. They had several interactions. Bobby Lashley and Elias have been like for the last month building up to it. Finn Balor and Baron Corbin. Did he face Baron Corbin? No, Baron Corbin's
Baron Corbin wrestled. Yeah, he basically got beat up by all those
guys. Which, and then the next night on Raw, they did the exact same thing, basically. Yeah. So, I think the other aspect is back in, you know, the 80s in our youth, you had a lot more squash match, what are called squash matches, which is your name guy versus a local talent or a guy that you know is not going to do anything.
Right.
But it was a way to utilize, to show off the skills and make people interested in a match against a bigger star. Whereas now when you're just running star versus star match.
Right.
But do you think fans would accept squash matches these days?
You know, I think they would. Here's what I'm thinking, though, is the McMahons are good at the lip service, and this is going to be the cynical part of the Positive Cynicism podcast. And I'm not judging because it's a business at the end of the day. The McMahons are answering to their investors. They are answering to their advertisers. They are answering to the USA Network. next year they're going to be answering, or in 2019 they're going to be answering to the Fox network. So the fans can say all they want, we want this, we want that, and the McMahons can say, well, we're going to give you what you want. But ultimately, you know, if Fox sees more value in Ronda Rousey being on their channel and on SmackDown, you know, they're going to find a way to move her from Raw to SmackDown. Or, you know, for how many, every fan I've heard talk about this on a podcast has said Raw needs to go back to 2 hours. And I don't think anybody would complain if it did. But USA, we talk about, you know, ratings are the lowest they've ever been, but it's still USA's top-rated show. So USA is, you know, as long as they're making money, they're going to be happy. And you know, fans say they're going to cancel the network, they're going to do the, they're not going to watch anymore. Obviously, they are, in a, to an extent, they are doing that by not watching Raw and not as much SmackDown. But I think at the end of the day, yeah, the McMahons are making us feel included, but it's only been a week. By the time this drops, it'll be had another week had been added in there. But I'm not overly optimistic that things are going to change, and they're certainly not going to change overnight.
That's one key point, is that you can't change overnight. Like, it, you need to do the slow burn, otherwise you negate the change altogether. Mm-hmm. And there should be a plan in place.
Right.
And, I mean, fantasy booking time, which I greatly dislike on podcasts, but I'm going to break my own rule and do it.
Sure.
Is, and I think this is where, why Impact has kind of gotten better in the last year, is unfortunately they do recite their talent roster comes in and out because they sign them short term.
Yeah.
But they have like a 3 month, and they tape all their television in like 1 month for 3 or 4 months. But they have that 3 month plan, and they say, okay, this is what we're going to build to. This is what we book. And I think WWE needs to do that. Like right now, WrestleMania should be booked out.
Mm-hmm.
And every show leading up to WrestleMania should build up to that. And then once WrestleMania hits, SummerSlam should be already penciled in, and you build to that. And mm-hmm. obviously you're going to have injuries,
sure.
suspensions, whatever, that may derail some plans. But if you have a focus of what you're looking, what you're building towards,
mm-hmm.
I think it will help story progression.
Right.
And then you can actually work on an actual story and not just throw some guys in a ring and let them fight, and then that's your feud. They do answer to the network. I had a point on that that I was going to make, and I forgot about it, but I'm going to go to something that I texted you earlier this week,
mm-hmm.
an epiphany that I kind of had after watching Raw and seeing the McMahons out there and everything, is Raw, it, Raw plays to two separate audiences. You have the at-home audience
yeah.
that wants the storyline progress, because they're watching for the entertainment value. Mm-hmm. They want to see what's next, what's coming up. Then you have the live audience who, when they're at home, will say, you know, I'm sick of John Cena, I'm sick of Stephanie McMahon, all this. But then when you get in the arena, you're there to have fun. You're there
right.
to enjoy yourself, and you want to see the stars. So when Vince McMahon comes out at 70-whatever years old,
mm-hmm.
you're going to cheer him, even
right.
though you're like, no, we're tired of the authority figure.
Right.
When Triple H comes out, same thing. John Cena, you're going to cheer them because, hey, I paid my money. And then does WWE listen to the live reaction and base decisions on that? Or are they actually looking at the product itself and seeing, judging by online comments, social media posts?
It's an interesting question. And, you know, I'll reference back to the Raw after WrestleMania, which we've been to a handful of them ourselves. And those have become kind of the most famous Raws each year because of the unpredictability of the crowd. And at first, WWE kind of ignored it.
Mm-hmm.
Now they acknowledge it and embrace it. So now it's kind of like it's lost its coolness factor, I guess, for lack of a better word. So in that regard, I think they are acknowledging the live crowd.
Mm-hmm.
If they're in Chicago, you know, you're going to get the CM Punk chant. So yeah, they're going to typically placate that crowd as well. But overall, I think they probably are still looking at what that audience, that television audience is, because obviously it's a much bigger audience. But, you know, again, it's a business. And like you said, Vince McMahon comes out and they cheer, or Triple H or whoever, And then, you know, they can monetize that in the concessions or the merchandise stands and all that stuff as well. So it's just, it's a very interesting time for professional wrestling. And I think, you know, we've talked about this before too, social media and its impact on things. And, you know, not only that, getting that peek behind the curtain even more so, because now you have wrestlers who are interacting and commenting back to fans, where years ago that would have never happened. And you go and wait in an arena and try to talk to somebody and you get ignored or they call the police on you. But now, you know, you can have those interactions and those talks. So I often wonder, had professional wrestling, had social media been around in the 70s and 80s, would professional wrestling even be around still today? Like, would it be so damaged and so tarnished, or so much it has eroded away from it? I would like to think it'll always be around in some form or fashion, but it's just, it's an interesting time to be a fan and to be involved in the business as well.
The business has evolved, and I think if you look at especially the independent scene, there are so many different styles and so many different companies that I guess if you're looking for a specific, you know, fix, you can find it. You know, Chikara, which I pimp out as much as often as I can, has the kind of, that's the one that makes me feel like the kid because I don't know the behind the scenes.
Yeah.
It's the larger than life characters or just the unique characters and simple storytelling that is all about, it's, I mean, the athleticism is there, but it's more on the story, I guess the character. It is kind of early 90s WWF
style. Sure. Yeah, I agree with that.
And then you have, you know, a company like Ring of Honor, which is about the athleticism. You have Impact, which is Impact. I don't really know how to explain Impact right now.
Yeah, they are going through some changes and challenges and whatnot. But yeah, like you said, mostly in a positive direction, I would say.
And then, you know, if you want death matches, if you want blood and guts, it's out there. So depending on what you want, whereas something like with WWE and even Impact to an extent, because that's theoretically the number two promotion, is they have to appeal to a larger base. They can't just do a niche. You know, Chikara draws in, what, maybe 500 people tops. Ring of Honor is a couple thousand, depending on where their shows are held. WWE is trying to do 20,000 a week.
Right.
You know, and then 70,000 for WrestleMania.
Right.
And you're only going to get that. And I think WrestleMania itself has even become bigger than what's in the ring. They could tell you, they could put tickets on sale like they normally do in October and not even tell you what's going to be on the show. And you just show up to the arena or the stadium and people will still buy tickets.
Right. It's kind of like the Super Bowl, you know, it's always been compared to the Super Bowl. It's like, you know, when Super Bowl tickets go on sale, you don't know what teams are going to make it. And then if two of the traditionally crappiest teams have had a turnaround season, you know, it's kind of like, do you want to see, again, not knocking Zack Ryder, but he pops into my head. Do you want to see Zack Ryder versus Mojo Rawley in the main event of WrestleMania? No, of course not. But you hear WrestleMania tickets are on sale, and we've paid some hefty prices for those tickets, not knowing anything about it because of the brand that it's built and that mystique and, you know, that nostalgia factor from back in 85, that first time we watched it on closed circuit or satellite.
Yeah, and Zack Ryder, Mojo Rawley, you mentioned, could actually be a main event of WrestleMania, as Gorilla Monsoon would say, a main event in any arena, if WWE wanted it to be the main event. Right. They could definitely get behind it and make it mean something.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
What they've done, you know, currently with those two guys would not sell out WrestleMania.
Right.
So let's throw this back in nostalgia.
Yeah.
So I think one of the things that is missing, and you kind of hinted on this before, is the promo ability. The lack nowadays of, well, now guys are out there with a script in their hand and they're just reciting lines that some other writer wrote for a character that they're playing.
Right.
Whereas back in the days of Dusty Rhodes, Ric Flair, Randy Savage, it's just guys taking bullet points and speaking themselves.
Right.
And I often say one of my favorite promos, it's a more recent promo, but it's Eddie Kingston from Chikara before their first pay-per-view High Noon, when he was talking about going for the grand championship for the first time. Chikara was just putting the champion out. Larry Sweeney had passed away earlier in the year, good friend of Kingston, and Kingston kind of dedicated that match to the memory of Larry, and it was a real promo. It was emotional. I mean, I still get goosebumps watching it. But when I hear Natalya Neidhart come out and talk about her father, Jim Neidhart, who recently passed away, it's her reading a line.
Right. Well, I think that is, you know, the difference with Chikara, for example, which is a more recent promo that you're talking about, versus, you know, Dusty Rhodes or Ric Flair, Rowdy Piper, those guys, to today's product is, it's Hollywood, right? You know, I there's actually a couple of assistant writer positions open right now for WWE. And it says knowledge of product, but to me, yeah, being a fan is great. But, you know, back in the day, you had Dusty Rhodes booking or Ole Anderson booking, Pat Patterson and Gerald Briscoe. And, you know, when those guys were behind the scenes, you could give a wrestler the bullet points. You know, I that's not to say that today Samoa Joe or AJ Styles or John Cena, for that matter, you know, if they were not given a script and we go back to that bullet point formula, I think that you still have the talkers out there. You know, I don't necessarily think we're in a generation of piss poor talkers. I think we're just in a generation of being way too worried about scripting it and being too much of the entertainment side and not enough of the pro wrestling or sports side of things.
Yeah, I think without letting someone just speak freely, and maybe not, you know, I'm not saying throw them out on Raw for that first time.
Right.
Have them do a pre-tape to see how it goes. You have the Performance Center, which I believe has a promo class. Let them work on that character, which is another factor. Like, everyone should have a defined character,
yeah,
that they know what the motivation is, what they're going for. What was I going to tie this into? Back to Becky Lynch, talking about promo, and actually, segue, I think what we have seen recently with the Roman Reigns escalation of being the man and the fans not buying into it. But it's like WWE has said, this is what we want. We're going to push it and push it and push it. And with Becky Lynch coming up, I don't know if that was the plan to make her the man.
Right.
But much like Steve Austin got lucky by flippantly saying Austin 316 during a promo, which no writer probably would have written.
Right.
But that became something that took on a life of its own. I think Nia Jax actually punching Becky in the face and breaking her face, giving her a concussion, probably worked out for the better in the long run.
Yeah.
Because it gives Becky more motivation and a delayed that Ronda Rousey Becky match, which now has more intrigue into it.
Yeah.
So that's where I'm also going with like the scriptedness of wrestling these days versus kind of a more relaxed, kind of throwing stuff out there and seeing what sticks kind of philosophy, like seeing what guys get over on their own.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think that, you know, we talk about, well, you know, we'll go back to Zack Ryder and, you know, with him kind of building that organic audience through his YouTube channel several years ago. And it feels like, again, if they have, you know, if they, being WWE, has an idea or something that they want, they're not going to necessarily listen to the crowd because they pushed Zach for a little bit, but then they pulled back. And I feel like he still had a lot to offer and could have done more. But I think because it wasn't Vince McMahon or whoever the head writer at the time, Michael Hayes maybe, because it wasn't their idea, they weren't going to necessarily, and I'm not saying that they're going to take a good idea and poop all over it because it wasn't their idea, but I do think sometimes ego does play a factor in it. And it's just, you know, the Becky Lynch, it seems almost a lot of times these things that happen by accident, Becky Lynch getting punched in the face, the incident with Stone Cold Steve Austin, and then having a little faith in these guys and gals and trusting, you know, Vince McMahon is 70 something years old now. Let Triple H, you know, Triple H is doing an amazing job on things with NXT. So I think if he opens things up and lets some other influencers get in there, it will improve the product as well.
Now, going back to Zack Ryder, he did have his WrestleMania moment a few years ago, WrestleMania 32, which he was put into a match after your boy Neville was injured. Uh-huh. He was not supposed to be in the Intercontinental title match. Ended up winning, shocking everyone.
Yeah.
Then losing the title the next night, but in that 24-hour time span, he managed to tweet out a picture of him with Scott Hall, Scott Hall holding the IC belt and being like, you know, 15 years ago, 20 years ago, whatever it was, I met Scott Hall when I met Razor Ramon when he was IC champion and I got to hold his belt and now Scott got to hold my belt.
Right.
And it was just that moment of, okay, that's the only reason why Zach won this match basically, was for WWE to have that moment on social media. Do you think WWE focuses too much on trying to create moments inorganically instead of, I mean, I'm trying to think of things from our past, like the Roddy Piper, Jimmy Snuka coconut angle, which I still don't know how much of that was legit and how much was scripted. Randy Savage being bit by the Cobra, like all these memorable moments, which obviously the Cobra part was planned.
Right, right.
But how much of it, how much of the things that we remember from the past were things that just happened in part of telling a story and then became iconicized as opposed to, okay, this is what we're going to do because people will react. And like I said, we didn't have social media back then, so we didn't have to try to go viral or.
Yeah, that's a very good question. And, you know, I guess the root or the early part of it, you know, the Piper coconut incident, I mean, they all say that it was, you know, kind of on the fly and it was a legit coconut smashing Snuka in the head and that it changed Snuka after that. You know, would Piper have become the monster bad guy that he became had he not done something like that? You know, Piper went way outside the box and took things to a whole new level. Back, you know, with the Austin comment, Austin 316, I believe it when he says that was an organic line that he threw out there and it resonated with the fans and they picked up on it. I didn't think about this reenactment of the Razor Ramon with the championship, you know, that is something to wrap my brain around because yeah, that does feel like, and I get we're talking about a scripted program and that it's not, you know, Zack Ryder didn't really, he won, but, you know, he wasn't necessarily the best at, you know, you get what I'm saying. Yes. So, yeah, that makes sense that they, because we do live in a very, you know, 6-second attention span. Oh, that's a cool photo op. You know, oh, here's Bailey when she was 10 meeting Lita, and now they're hanging out backstage at Evolution, you know. So now that does make sense that maybe we're manufacturing, or WWE is manufacturing more of these feel-good moments just for the sake of having that Instagram post or that click onto WWE.com.
Same way with, like, when they brought in Ronda Rousey or they have events happen that they know will get them on sports center or on ESPN or the tabloid, you know, like when John Cena and Nikki Bella got engaged.
Yeah.
You know, that where John Cena's like, oh, no one knew about this, but you had 70,000 people holding signs, you know, everyone knew where that story was going.
Right.
To. And unfortunately it did not have a happy ending. Sorry, John and Nikki. Again, here we are 30 plus years into our fandom of wrestling. We don't watch as much or as intently. And I think that's the other issue for us is, much like with music and movies, my love of all things 80s and the movies I think of are that I deem classics, and I'm air quoting for the music, but I don't listen to music the way that I used to. I don't go out and buy the CD. Mm-hmm. MTV isn't playing music anymore. Yeah. So you don't discover bands. Movies are, again, my cynicism is everything is a sequel, prequel, reboot, remake, rehash. So there's nothing new coming out. And I'm like, I've seen that already. So I'm not, I don't have the emotional attachment to it as someone else might. Wrestling is kind of that same way, where there are a lot of stories that we're like, oh, well, I've seen this angle before, or I've seen this, or LOL, Cena wins, whatever. What is it now, though? Because we are still fans.
Right.
You're involved with the independent scene here in Southern Illinois. I was upset that I did not get to see you wrestle in a cage and help Roger Mathis beat you up. And Tom Harness, I can't believe you helped Kevin. Anyway, here we are talking about wrestling. You do a weekly podcast on wrestling.
Right.
What is it that keeps us from just tuning out altogether? Because, again, you and I have been to 9 WrestleManias, WrestleMania 32 being the last. Mm-hmm. And I remember both of us walking out going like, yeah, that was WrestleMania. Whereas friends we were with were like, oh my gosh, that was awesome. When Shane and Undertaker had the Hell in a Cell match.
Yeah.
And we're like, they just went through all the same spots that you expect from a Hell in a Cell match. But again, we're still talking about it.
Right. Yeah. Great question. It's an excellent question. And it's something that I often wonder with other fan podcasts that I listen to. I listen to a handful of fan podcasts versus, ones that are hosted by people who are in the business or who have been in the business. So, and a majority of my podcast listening is actually wrestling. So I'm watching it, and then I'm listening to it, and then I'm podcasting about it and blogging about it. It's one of those things. It's just kind of been such a constant in my life. It was around, before I got married, before I had kids. It's just one of those things that I've always fallen back on, and I've been entertained with it. I view it no differently than someone who grew up watching, the NFL. You see the same, and I'm not that into sports, but to me, sports, it's, throw the ball, run with the ball, score a touchdown. Wrestling is very similar. Two guys get in the ring, two gals get in the ring, they go at it. One of them wins, one of them loses. It's the story that they tell, and that's what I like about wrestling over other forms of sports, is that you're getting a story every time, and the best ones are those ones that take the time to put characters and you get invested in there. It's like watching a soap opera or watching an episodic TV show, whether it's The Simpsons or whether it's something like 90210 is what the first thing that popped into my head. But, watching those weekly dramas, you invest in those characters, and wrestling is the same exact thing. You're investing in these characters. You want to know what they're going to do. And part of it too is you take it outside of the ring, you take it outside of the arena, and you learn more about, and that's where the social media component comes in. And that's kind of how we'll go back to Becky Lynch. That's where that has exploded, was not necessarily what she did have some great stuff that she said in the ring, but it's the Twitter war, and I'm using the air quotes too now, that she and Ronda Rousey have engaged in, that has been so captivating, I think, to a lot of people. Why do you still watch?
Because I'm not married and I don't have kids. No, I we've said this before. It's called the sickness in wrestling circles. I can't step away. And that's, I guess, a good way to tangent back into more nostalgia is, I got into wrestling when I was 9, 10 years old. Mm-hmm. In the early 90s, when I went off to college, I didn't have access to USA. So, I was in school the fall of 92, spring of 93, my freshman year of college. I didn't even know Monday Night Raw existed until I got home. And then the first draw that I saw was the one where the one, two, three, or the kid beat Razor Ramon.
Right.
And I had seen the kid in global wrestling. Mm-hmm. And I was like, oh, he's in WWF. They're not going to do anything with him. And he shocks everybody. And again, that's a moment that, right. I mean, it was a moment that they intended for, but it's one of those iconic moments that yeah. just kind of happened. And then I kind of, through college, was in and out of wrestling because I didn't have access to cable as much. So I wasn't.
And the interwebs weren't really around yet.
Yeah. And then two things happened as the internet came around. So then I discovered the dirt sheets, mm-hmm. which I didn't know about.
Right.
You know, existing in the 80s. And I was more invested in, okay, what's going on behind the scenes? And this was during the Monday Night War, and people were jumping back and forth. And you're like, oh, who's going to leave WWF next? Or what's going to go on in WCW? And at the time, I was producing a music video, an 80s metal music video show in college. And since we didn't have YouTube, we didn't have a way to get the show. You know, the station that I was working for, I air quote work because it was more just volunteering, we only played to the dorms.
Uh-huh.
And we were like, man, we want to get our show out because I had done interviews with bands. And so I had just done an interview with the band Warrant, mm-hmm. which is a horrible interview, by the way. Never interview a band after they have performed and gotten yeah. liquored up. But I went on a Warrant message board and I started like finding people and like emailing them, just saying like, hey, I've got this show. Would you be interested in copies of the tapes of the video? Trying to get the brand mm-hmm. out there. And this one girl that I started messaging, we kind of became internet friends before there was things called internet
before friends. You slid it into her DMs.
And then we, her email had a bunch of Stone Cold Steve Austin quotes. And I responded to one thing and I like made an Austin reference. And she's like, oh, are you a wrestling fan? I'm like, yeah. And she lived in Ohio and had and got ECW.
Okay.
At the time. So I had read about ECW but didn't know about it.
Mm-hmm.
She made me this 6-hour comp tape
oh, wow.
of ECW match, and it just blew me away because mm-hmm. it was so different than everything that was going on.
Right.
And then ECW kind of spurned my interest back into wrestling. But I think now most of my interest is the behind the scenes, and it is the business aspect. While I still appreciate the wrestling, and that's like going back to Chikara. That's why I like Chikara, because I don't know the behind the scenes.
Yeah.
So I can just watch as a fan and mm-hmm. not, you know, overanalyze everything.
Right.
Whereas when I watch WWE and Impact, I'm like, okay, why did you do this? Why did you do that? You know, it's...
Yeah, it's a very interesting, like you said, kind of getting that behind the peak curtain, it adds some intrigue to it, and maybe invest a little bit more in the characters that you are cheering for or that you want to cheer for versus, you know, the guys that you maybe don't like as much or whatever. So it is a weird business, and working in it. And I've been in and out of the indie scene here locally too. You know, there was probably a 3-year period where I wasn't doing anything with it. And now that I'm back in it and have been for almost 3 years again, and I'm pretty entrenched in it right now. And I wouldn't trade this experience for anything in the world. And it's opened my eyes to so much. And, you know, there's so much that kind of goes on behind the scenes, at least on the indie level, that I don't think other fans would appreciate. And you do try to keep some of those things, you know, in a box and not, you know, as the magician says, you're not going to show you how he does all of his tricks. So, but yeah, I would definitely say when I'm at these indie shows, that nostalgia factor kicks back into, because it is a little more old school and a little more back to when I was growing up and watching, going to the live shows where you're in a smaller venue and it's dark and, you know, fans are cheering and, you know, making their voices heard and whatnot.
And I think that is the biggest key for wrestling fans. And you know, if you're listening to this show and you're not a wrestling fan, one, thank you for listening, because
absolutely,
I mean, that's an hour of your time that you couldn't have been doing anything else more productive. So thanks for listening. But, you know, the quote is always, when talking about why people are wrestling fans, to a wrestling fan, you don't have to explain it. To a non-wrestling fan, nothing you say
right.
will make sense.
Right.
It just is what it is. And I think a lot of wrestling today needs to go back to that suspension of disbelief. Mm-hmm. Stop being overly critical. Stop being ironic in things. Just accept it for what it is. Enjoy it, hopefully, and have fun.
Mm-hmm.
But not like post-WrestleMania Raw fun.
Right, right. Don't be a jerk.
Yeah, be fun and be classy. Don't, you know, if you're at the show and you're cheering, be respectful of the people around you. But
totally agree with that. Well said.
All right. Any last words on wrestling?
No, man, I appreciate it. In 2019, you know, we've talked about it on the My 123 Cents podcast. 2018, I did not commit the time to watching the main product, you know, WWE, some of the bigger guys. I did get more involved in the indie stuff, but 2019, I hope to have a better balance of WWE and some of these other promotions that are on the bigger stage.
All right, I'll have you back on at the end of 2019 and ask you about independent wrestlers there and see if you know who they are.
All right.
We'll do flashcards. All right, thanks for listening. Next week will be all nostalgia regarding music and a channel that was once known for playing music. And that channel, of course, is MTV, which was a staple of most 80s children's afternoon and evening viewing. Thank you for listening. Again, he's at Kevin Hunsberger or at My 123 Cents, not the Buck and a Quarter podcast.
That is true.
It's the My 123 Cents podcast. You can also find him my123cents.blogspot.com. I am at Chad Smart, www.positivecynicism.com. And remember to go to the Jittery Monkey Podcasting Network page, which is jitterymonkey.com. Click on that shop button, buy some merch. Support this so Kevin can get some good audio equipment, recording equipment. As always, question everything. Do something positive.
This is a production of the Jittery Monkey Podcast Network. For more jittery shenanigans, go to jitterymonkey.com.